Hi, everyone. My name is Michelle from The Table in Uniontown. Thanks for tuning into our podcast this week. We're happy you're here. This is the live recording from this Sunday's sermon. We hope that as you listen, you'll more deeply understand the truth of God's word and how much he loves you. Let's jump in.
Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Send your bread on the surface of the water, for after many days you may find it. Give a portion to seven, or even to eight, for you don't know what disaster may happen on earth. If the clouds are full, they will pour out rain on the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or the north, the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. One who watches the wind will not sow, and the one who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you don't know the path of the wind, or how bones develop in the womb of a pregnant woman, so also you don't know the work of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and at evening do not let your hand rest, because you don't know which will succeed, whether one or the other, or if both of them will be equally good. Light is sweet, and it is pleasing for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if someone lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. And let him remember the days of darkness, since they will be many. All that comes is futile. Rejoice, young person, while you are young, and let your heart be glad in the days of your youth. And walk in the ways of your heart and in the desires of your eyes. But know that for all of these things, God will bring you to judgment. Remove sorrow from your heart and put away pain from your flesh, because youth in the prime of life are fleeting. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated.
Well, good morning. If you don't know me or you just somehow forgot, my name is Joey Nigro. I'm the pastor here at The Table, and it is so good to be with you on one of these last Sundays of the summer. Let's do a little litmus test real quick. Who here, because we've got 2 weeks left in Ecclesiastes. This Sunday, next Sunday, then I'm having a baby, and everything will still be meaningless. I just won't be talking about it anymore. Who here has gained an appreciation for Ecclesiastes this summer? Who here, if you're honest, would clip it out of your Bible if you could? Few of you, yeah. I haven't convinced all of you. Well, I am liking it. And we've gotten in sort of a pattern here of preaching through the Old Testament during the summer, and I kind of like it. I think we'll keep doing it. Some churches, big churches, do summer at the movies or whatever, you know, like, did you see Die Hard? Well, this is how Jesus is just like it. We probably won't do that, but we probably will stick to the Old Testament in the summer, I think. So, well, we love certainty, don't we? We love certainty. As Christians, I think certainty is a good thing in a lot of ways. I believe with great certainty that God created the heavens and the earth, that human beings are born with a sin nature, that God sent his only son Jesus to die for us, to rescue us from the consequences of our sin. I believe with great certainty that he was killed on a Roman cross, and then on the third day he rose again. I believe with great certainty, because of those things, that he's going to come back again one day. Certainty is good about these things. If we're Christians, then we're staking our lives on those truths, right? We should have a level of certainty. Christians throughout the centuries they've died for those beliefs. They've been tortured. They've endured the most agonizing and gruesome things for those beliefs. Do you think Christians going to the arena to face the lions or seeing a stake that they would be burned at, said, resurrection of Jesus? Yeah, I'm like 60-40 on it. No, of course not. No one's enduring what they endured without a great level of certainty. Certainty can be very good. But I believe that we feel we are certain more than we actually are certain sometimes. Ever listen to two people debate anything? Take politics, for example. When have you ever heard two people intensely debating on something on the political spectrum and hear one or both of them admit that they're just not too sure about something? Or even to say that somebody that disagrees with them has a good point and they'll think about that more, right? It's rare, isn't it? Probably almost never happens, in fact. Everyone says everything they think with their whole chest, like they've just figured everything out, don't they? No one seems to show any signs of doubt, that they might have some gaps in their knowledge or whatever. It's impressive in a sense, but it's also false. We might feel certain, but we don't know everything, do we? Maybe your DraftKings or your FanDuel or whatever sports gambling app you prefer shows that you think you're pretty certain about things and that you've been wrong much of the time, right? You don't have to raise your hands. The sports books, they count on you thinking you have a really good grasp of reality, that you really have a finger on the pulse of the NFL when you can't actually predict what's going to happen. And your balance in the app or in your bank account shows what Kohelet is getting at this morning. You don't know it all, you can't know it all, and you don't know what's going to happen much of the time. Kohelet has been building a case for life under the sun being hevel. Hevel. And if you haven't been with us this whole summer and you're like, what is hevel? It means a vapor. For being something that you can't grasp, that you can't get your fingers around. He says, we cannot find meaning in things under the sun. We die under the sun. Things aren't fair under the sun, as we talked about last week. And now he says, we cannot predict what will happen under the sun. We do not know it all. How often is that proven true? Well, my wife, she was single when I met her. She was dating people that she met online, as you do these days, you know. And one day, I walked into her work at a grocery store for an interview for a part-time job. She was busy when I walked in. Someone introduced me to her. She barely gave me a hello, later stating that she was busy and she felt the person that she was meeting, in this instance me, would likely either not get the job or wouldn't be around that long. And so she would just meet me in more detail if I was. Well, I did get hired. Thank you very much. Very qualified. And she didn't marry someone that she met online. She did way better and secured this trophy husband. Kidding, obviously. She would say she never thought she would scour the internet far and wide for a man just for one to show up at the grocery store, right? She laid her best developed plans, but she couldn't know what would actually happen. Could she? By the way, this is how I got Randy Summers in my life, too. It was a real win-win situation. And it's how you all have Randy Summers in your life. It's great. She thought she couldn't have known what would happen, but she may have thought that she did. She may have thought that she could. She had it drawn up in her head. See, this is exactly what we tend to do. We make plans. As a kid, we say, one day I'm going to grow up, and I'm going to be a doctor. As a kid, as an elementary school kid, I said I would be a doctor. Yeah, Rob's laughing. I throw up over everything. I pass out when I see blood. I pass out when I throw up now. It's crazy. Oops. In junior high, this is worse. I said I would be a comedian. And I'm not funny. I probably have a better chance of being a doctor, even with a passing out issue. Wrong again, you know. Here I am. I'm a pastor. But we say we're going to be something. We end up being something else. And we say, I'm going to grow up, I'm going to get married, and I'm going to have a family. And for some of us, it doesn't happen. And some of us say, like, I'm never going to drink alcohol. I'm never going to do drugs. I'm never going to do this. I'm never going to do that. And then we do it. We say it with certainty as if we know. But we don't know necessarily. And it goes a step further. Kind of the same, but a little nuanced, I think. We think not only will I do the thing like have the family or the kids or the wife or the job, but we will do it, we think, until we're old and gray, won't we? We will raise the kids until they're 18, then they'll move out, they'll begin their own lives. We'll get married. We'll stay married until we're old and gray. We'll be healthy until a reasonable age. It's the way we see it. It's the way we've drawn it up. And then we put on blinders to every example that we've ever heard of when that hasn't happened for other people. We somehow don't face the reality that you might not have the spouse or the family, and if you do, you might not get to hold on to them for as long as you plan. We cannot predict the future. We don't ever say like, yeah, you know, I'll grow up. I'll probably live till I'm like 47, you know? Or like, I can't wait to raise my kids until they're in third grade. No one does that. We go through this life picturing retirement, picturing our kids having a graduation day, picturing them having kids, picturing their wedding, picturing our grandkids. But it's not guaranteed. We don't know. I love having a calendar app that's full. There's something visually appealing about a future. We like to see that there are more days out there, and if there are appointments on my calendar, there must be more days ahead, of course. But like it or not, there are things that we don't know. We don't know what God knows. We just don't. We don't know what he knows. We don't know the future. There's this theological idea called open theism, where God knows all knowable things. And people who hold this idea posit that the future is not a knowable thing, and thus God doesn't know it. I think that's biblically unfounded. I'm not going to go down the rabbit trail of debunking it, but I really believe the Bible shows us that God knows the future. He knows what you're going to do. He knows what's going to happen to you. And he knows it all, and you don't. He knows the number of your days. You don't. He knows whether you'll bury your kids or your kids will bury you. You don't. He has all that knowledge. He has all the knowledge. Yours is very limited. And we know this in our head, right? We clearly know there are things we don't know, but so often we live like we know the future is a guarantee. In James 4, 13 through 15, James, for a moment, channers his inner Kohelet when he says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will travel to such and such a city and spend a year there and do business and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring, what your life will be, for you are like a vapor." All right, James, you've read Ecclesiastes, "that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you should say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that." Now, I don't think he's being a legalist here. You shouldn't read this with the rigidity where we don't say we're going to do something anymore, right? That's not the point here, surely. It's not like, you coming over tomorrow? If the Lord wills, like, should I be home or... Right? It's not his point. He's saying you should live with an awareness that your life, that your future, that your next week, your next hour, your next breath, none of it is guaranteed. This is what Kohelet is getting at in the first two verses of this chapter. "Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to seven or even to eight, for you know not what disaster may happen on earth." You know not what disaster may happen on earth. I don't think an asteroid is going to hit the building while I'm preaching, but I guess I don't know that it's not either. We don't know what's ahead. We can plan, but we cannot do much beyond that. He goes on, "If the clouds are full, they will pour out rain on the earth. Whether a tree falls to the north or to the south, the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. One who watches the wind will not sow, and the one who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you don't know the path of the wind or how bones develop in the womb of a pregnant woman, so also you don't know the work of God who makes everything." He's saying here, we can know some things. You can know that full clouds will eventually empty, right? Rain's going to happen sooner or later. Or that if a tree falls based on kind of how it's leaning, that it'll rest where it lands. And yet, you don't control the tree falling in the forest. You don't control the cloud filling up with rain. But you have some understanding about those things. You're smart enough to know them. But then he begins to say, you might get too caught up in reading the signs or the weather looking or the weather, like looking at the clouds or the wind and which way it's blowing, you may end up paralyzed, actually. You may not take any action because you're so concerned about the weather or the wind. The wind might blow the seed away as you plant it. It might rain so you won't tend to your crops. And he's saying at some point, you must stop reading the signs. You must live. Stop reading the signs and do something. Don't be paralyzed by it. And then he says this. He says, just as you don't know the path of the wind or how bones develop in the womb of a pregnant woman, so also you don't know the work of God who makes everything. Not only do you not know what God knows, but to put it how David Gibson put it, you don't know how to do what God does. You don't know the path of the wind. You might know how to make a baby, you know what I mean? But you don't know how to make a baby, right? Right? Like, you might know how to start the process, but you don't know how in the womb a baby is formed together, how God does that. You don't know the work of God who makes everything. We need to settle into this. A few weeks back, we talked about this, how kids don't have to worry about tons of stuff. Instead, they can just enjoy being kids. My kids don't wonder if the mortgage got paid last month. They don't worry about the fridge getting filled. They think popsicles and chicken nuggets just grow on trees or sprout out of our freezer. It's an awesome way to live. It gives them rest. Trusting someone who knows more than you gives you rest. When we remember that we are finite beings who do not know it all, we can rest in it. I think anxiety comes when we think we know the most and then we have the responsibility. But when we admit to ourselves that God knows more than us and he cares for us, we rest. It would be good for us to just shrug and say, I don't know, occasionally. Don't you think? I don't know. I don't know what's best. I don't know how that happens. To not know and yet not be paralyzed in decisions because we don't know and can't know some things, and with faith in the one wiser than us, we act and we live our lives. I don't think talking about this chapter of Ecclesiastes, or I don't think that anybody can talk about this chapter of Ecclesiastes without immediately being drawn to remember God's words to Job in Job 38. He says this. He says, then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind. Talking's really tough for me. Maybe I should have been a doctor. He said, who is this who obscures my counsel with ignorant words? Get ready to answer me like a man. When I question you, you will inform me. Where were you when I established the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who fixed its dimensions? Certainly you know. God gets a little sarcastic sometimes. Who stretched a measuring line across it? Who supports its foundation? Or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Who enclosed the sea behind doors when it burst from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and total darkness its blanket? When I determined its boundaries and put its bars and doors in place? When I declared, you may come this far but no further, your proud waves stop here. Have you ever in your life commanded the morning or assigned the dawn its place so it may seize the edges of the earth and shake the wicked out of it? The earth is changed as clay by a seal. Its hills stand out like the folds of a garment. Light is withheld from the wicked, and the arm raised in violence is broken. Have you traveled to the sources of the sea or walked in the depths of the ocean? Have the gates of death been revealed to you? Have you seen the gates of deep darkness? Have you comprehended the extent of the earth? Tell me if you know all this. Where is the road to home of light? Do you know where darkness lives so you can lead it back to its border? Are you familiar with the paths to its home? Don't you know? You were already born. You have lived so long. Have you entered the place, this is my favorite one, have you entered the place where the snow is stored? Or have you seen the storehouses of hail, which I hold in reserve for times of trouble, for the day of warfare and battle? What road leads to the place where light is dispersed? Where is the source of the east wind that spreads across the earth? Who cuts a channel for a flooding rain or clears the way for lightning? to bring rain on an uninhabited land, on a desert with no human life, to satisfy the parched wasteland and cause the grass to sprout? Does the rain have a father? Who fathered the drops of dew? Whose womb did the ice come from? Who gave birth to the frost of heaven? When water becomes as hard as stone and the surface of the watery depths is frozen, can you fasten the chains of the Pleiades or loosen the belt of Orion? Can you bring out constellations in their season and lead the bear to her and her cubs? Do you know the laws of heaven? Can you oppose its authority on earth? Can you command the clouds so that a flood of waters cover you? Can you send out lightning bolts and they go? Do they report to you, "Here we are"? Who put wisdom in the heart or gave the mind understanding? Who has the wisdom to number the clouds, or who can tilt the water jars of heaven? When the dust hardens like cast metal and the clods of dirt stick together, can you hunt prey for a lioness or satisfy the appetite of young lions? When they crouch in their dens and lie in wait within their lairs, who provides the raven's food when its young cry out to God and wander about for lack of food? I wanted to read the whole chapter. Why? Because this is us. We are like Job. All of this stuff is way beyond our understanding. We cannot know all that God knows. We cannot know all that God does. And we cannot do all that God can do. Period. To all the questions God rapid fires at Job, we have to look at him and say, "No, I don't know." To know the number of our days, to know the number of the days of our loved ones, it would be a great burden. To trust the one who does know them, whether they are many or whether they are few, is a great gift. And there's peace in it. We don't know if each day is our last, so we live every day as if it were our last. We don't know how to make our heart beat or our lungs function, so we thank the God who makes those things happen in us, and we just trust him. Kohelet says, "Wake up and thank God for another day, and go to bed knowing that another morning is never guaranteed." And he tells us another thing that we don't know here too. Verse 6, "In the morning sow your seed, and at the evening do not let your hand rest, because you don't know which will succeed, one or the other, or if both of them will be equally good." Robert Alter, he says, Kohelet is telling us to diversify our investments, in a sense. And here's what he means. We just don't know what's going to succeed in the long run. We don't know. We don't know. We have ideas. We have insights. We can research. We can work hard. We can consult. We can pray. But in life, we don't know what will be successful and what won't. I'm a church planner, so I immediately think about churches, what will succeed and what won't. Some churches grow and bloom and exist and see decades of ministry. Some don't. There are best practices, there are metrics to hit, there's support to raise, there's a team to build, and yet at the end of the day, we don't know how to guarantee success. It's hard. Restaurant owners, business owners, all the same, it's hard to guarantee success. Be wise, live wisely, trust God, and things will work out, or they won't, but you'll at least have gotten closer to God either in your success or your failure. So what does wise living look like? Verses 1 and 2 again. "Send out your bread on the surface of the water, for after many days you may find it. Give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you don't know what disaster may happen on earth." We talked about the latter part of that at the beginning. The latter part of that at the beginning. Now we're going to talk about the beginning of part of that. Give a portion to 7 or 8. He's saying give stuff away. Be kind and generous and give much to many. Why? Because you don't know when disaster will strike, and you can't take it with you. You cannot. So rather than storing up and storing up and storing up, give away, help out, give things away, give money away. Not saying don't save, not saying don't have a 401k, but ask the question, am I generous? Do you treat money and possessions like you don't know when disaster will come your way? It's so easy to hold all your stuff and your money tight, saying you never know when something bad will happen and I need it, right? We so often think of that. But Kohelet's saying you don't know when something bad might happen and you won't need it, right? He's like flipping that on its head. Another thing I think this passage tells us is that living wisely is that failure and success, they're not final, and so we must not obsess over them. We don't know how to guarantee success, and so success must not be the ultimate thing. It's easy in work or in starting a business or a church or many other ventures to freeze. We used to talk about fight or flight a long time ago. Now we talk about fight, flight, or freeze. That's right, fight, flight, or freeze. Possums, when they're scared, maybe you've seen this, they stop where they're at and they fall over and they play dead. And they're not even playing dead, actually. It's a response in their body. They go into a catatonic state of sorts. Some of us are like the possum when a big decision happens. Because what if I don't succeed? What if I fail? We become catatonic. We freeze. And the idea we get from Kohelet is we don't know enough to guarantee success, but the worst thing would be not doing anything at all, not trying, not living a life, to not try to bury our talents. That's the worst thing we could do. It's the least wise path we could take. It's a waste of your life, and you only get one. If we freeze, we don't really live. Kohelet tells us not to take this route, that wisdom is living a full, loving, good life, free of the fear of failure, because for Christians, even if we fail, and we fail repeatedly, we know the one who has never failed, and specifically has never and will never fail us. And because his love never fails, one day we will exist in an age with him where failure is no longer possible for us. And lastly, we should live wisely just for wisdom's sake. What do I mean? Well, wisdom doesn't guarantee anything, right? That's the point. You don't know how to guarantee results. Wise people end up poor. Fools end up rich. You cannot guarantee the results, so wisdom cannot and should not be a means to an end. God does not give the wise person more than the fool as a guarantee. So you mustn't live wise for that reason alone. Live wisely because the wise life is the good life, even if the wise life doesn't lead to success or the results you would have asked for. But in the end, no, God sees your wise life. The wise life is the life lived with God. The wise life is the life that holds death before it always. The wise life, Kohelet indicates, is a life of giving to others. The wise life we've learned, and if you haven't been with us this summer, this will be a strange thing for me to say, but the wise life we've learned is the life that puts the skull on the desk, metaphorically speaking at least, so that every day you might remember that it might be your last. If this is the last day of your life, how do you want to spend it? Do you want to spend it being grouchy? Do you want to be grumpy with your family on the last day of your life on earth? Do you want to stare at your phone mindlessly all evening if it's your last day? Do you want to skip your quiet time on the morning of the last day of your life? Do you want to skip church on the last day of your life? See, they're not here, so they won't be offended if I say that. Do you want to argue with someone about politics on the last day of your life? Do you want to try to get two hands full and still be unsatisfied on the last day of your life? Or do you want to accept whatever comes your way, knowing it will be imperfect, knowing it might not be the circumstances you would have asked for, coming to terms with injustice, but knowing that another age is coming? That's a compilation of the things we've learned thus far from Kohelet, isn't it? And now we can ask, we can add to the list, on your last day, if you're holding death ever before you, knowing nothing is guaranteed, do you want the burden of pretending you know it all? Do you want the burden of trying to figure it all out? Or do you want to live in the peaceful resignation that there are many things that you do not and cannot know, that aren't for you to know, and that on this side of eternity you can rest your soul in its true refuge, the God who does know them? He's good, and he can be trusted with them. Live the wise life for the sake of the wise life itself. David Gibson on this topic to close. A life fully lived is a life receiving the reward of today as a gift that you don't deserve and one that God has given you to enjoy. One day, it won't be possible. Death is coming. So do your bucket list, not your to-do list. We all have a to-do list. Feed the dog, go to the bank, do the shopping, phone the plumber. But Ecclesiastes is a book that urges us to do our bucket list. Michelle, you can come up. Today, the question is, will you have the wisdom to say that you are lacking some knowledge, that you don't know it all? Will you have the wisdom to shrug your shoulders about some things and say, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how many days I have left. I don't know how much time I have with these people. I don't know how much time I have with my children. I don't know. You don't know what only God knows. You don't know how to do what only God can do. Your knowledge is, at best, incomplete. And yet, the God who knows it all gave it all to know you and to be known by you. In fact, he gave his son Jesus, who, on the night that he was betrayed, took the bread. And after giving thanks, he broke it, saying, this is my body broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, again giving thanks. He said, this is a new covenant in my blood for the forgiveness of sins. We take communion every week here at the table by taking the bread, dipping it in the cup, and remembering what Jesus has done for us to secure a future for us. Communion can be found towards the back on my left, gluten-free communion towards the back on my right. This morning, as we reflect before communion, I would love for you to sit for a moment and think about what it would look like for you to release your need to know it all. Maybe you don't think that you know it all, but how often do you take growing old as a given? How often do you take tomorrow as a given? How often are you guilty of the idea from the James passage that we read earlier? In a few years, we'll do this, and we'll go here, and our kids will have kids, and we'll retire. Maybe sit and reflect on how Ecclesiastes has helped you rethink certainty. How can a newfound uncertainty free you to really live in Christ? So when you're ready, at your own pace, in your own time, you can stand up and take communion. I'm going to pray. My friends Randy and Rachel will be on either side of the room to pray for you if you want somebody to just put a hand on your shoulder and pray for you through something that you're dealing with this week. I very much encourage you to receive prayer this morning. So, Father, I'm just grateful for uncertainty this morning. You know, as I think about it, uncertainty would be a terrifying, terrifying prospect if not for a God who knows it all. And it could still be terrifying if that God who knew it all wasn't good. But we have an all-knowing, infinitely good, kind, loving, just Father in you, God. And so much like my kids don't need to know if the mortgage is paid, or the electric bill's paid, or if we need to go get some more chicken nuggets to put in the freezer. So we don't need to know the number of our days, the number of our loved ones' days, what'll happen in 5 years, where we'll be, what'll come of our friendships. Instead, we can just rest in the arms of an infinitely good Father who knows what's best and who can be trusted. I pray that we would each be a step closer to that sort of life this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks so much for listening to our Sunday service. If you're interested in joining us in the future, you can find us at 17766 Cleveland Avenue Northwest on Sunday mornings at 10. Additionally, we host a meal every first and third Sunday after service in order to fellowship with one another. Visit aseatforyou.org for more information. We hope you'll join us next week. Go in peace.